Welcome to the Neo-Narcissism Podcast, hosted by emotional intelligence specialists Kim and Jackie of Element Q, alongside strategic psychotherapist Brad Kaufman.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Neo-Narcissism Podcast. On today's episode, we are talking about choice, and in particular, how a narcissist can make you the victim of choice. So let's dive into that, and we'll sort of explain out what we mean by that.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, Jackie, as you were saying, like they make you a victim of your own choices. Mm-hmm. And you say it so well. So kind of maybe tell listeners about the setup.
Yeah, so I'm sure many people have experienced this where maybe you're just having a conversation with somebody and you need to go out for lunch. And so you say to the person, where would you like to go? And the response you get is, oh, you know, anywhere. I don't care. You choose. So you make a decision. You choose a restaurant. You get to that restaurant, and then all of a sudden the person you're with starts complaining about the food. Says, you know, that it has a smell or that the service sucks. And, you know, the list goes on and on and on. And it's all your fault because you picked that restaurant. Mm-hmm. Even though you gave them a chance to make a decision and to voice an opinion, but it becomes a way of gaslighting after the fact, because no matter what you pick, whichever restaurant you pick, it's going to be the wrong one. Mm-hmm.
So as you're saying, there's the setup.
Yeah.
As soon as they say, oh yeah, I don't care, you choose. They ultimately, in reality, are forfeiting their choice at that point. Mm-hmm. But then they want to reclaim the choice or reclaim what their preferences later. So ultimately, they've lied to you. They've set you up. They've lied to you. They put the decision in your hands. And I love the way that you say that. You become the victim of your own choices, because that's exactly what happens when they set you up in that way. So.
It feels particularly cruel to do this to somebody, because typically when somebody's asking, where do you want to go for lunch, or anything along those lines, they're looking for sort of this bonded experience. They're looking to create some sense of unity, like you've spoken about, harmony, mm-hmm. Between the two of you. And so it's coming from a really lovely place. And so to have it weaponized against you afterwards, it really keeps the ground shaky, which they like, which the narcissist likes, and starts to chip away at the person a little bit,
yeah.
Right? About at their esteem, at their confidence.
Well, and you can also see if this is somebody, like if you have this as a parent or somebody in a romantic relationship, if this becomes the norm and you know, regardless, you're going to be set up, well, you're going to lose your confidence in making any decisions.
Absolutely.
So the decision-making process in general is going to come to a complete halt, because you know, regardless if you pick A or B or C, something's going to be wrong with your decision.
Yeah.
Doesn't mm-hmm. matter what. It doesn't matter how many ways you look at it, how many things you've decided. If that's the game they're playing, it's never going to be right. Mm-hmm. So why make a decision at all?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is where like the victim of a narcissist can feel really paralyzed within that process of decision making, like you're saying. And then it doesn't stay with just within the relationship. It starts to sort of filter into
yeah.
other areas of their life that they're sort of paralyzed to make any decision.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And even potentially maybe even knowing further down the road, if this becomes an habitual thing, what their preferences even are. Because they're so focused on trying to maintain this sense of harmony and unity in focusing on the other person's preferences. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and I think the underlying framework, like you're talking about, is that unity and that harmony. Because if you really don't care about what the other person thinks, then you're not really caring too much about unity and harmony anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if they're upset, who cares?
Yeah.
Right? But if you're a person that wants to make a decision that makes both of you happy, mm-hmm. right? Or that you can both be satisfied with. So it really depends on the level that you care. Mm-hmm. So It's if you're a caring person and you want the other person to have a positive experience, well, now again, they're using your characteristics and your qualities against you.
That feels like a really sharp stab, right?
It
like,
is. Yeah. It is a really sharp stab.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting how it can be, it can sort of feel or be kind of sneaky. Like, that sounds really clear, and it sounds sort of crafted, and it is. However, there's, having it happen repetitively over time, there's something particularly vicious about it.
Yeah. Well, like you're talking about, it just breaks people down because it's the chronic experience of being stuck in a double bind.
Yes.
So that damned if you do, damned if you don't type framework. And no matter what you do, you just can't win.
Yeah. So I was going to say, so say as a couple, you have to make a decision about, I don't know, buying a car or something. And you know that regardless of what car you pick, it's going to be the wrong car. But you also know you need to pick a car. So the narcissist is going to be attacking you because you haven't purchased a new car yet. But at the same time, you know, regardless of which new car you pick, it's never going to be the right decision. So like you said, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't, because there's you still can't win.
And from the empath's experience, like, that's actually a really interesting example, Jackie, because I think from the empath's experience, it's one thing to pick the quote-unquote wrong restaurant for one meal. It's different when it's a bigger purchase like that, because the empath knows, like, they might experience a lot of anxiety about it, you know, but okay, so they go ahead and make the decision knowing that they have the lifetime of that car to hear about the complaints of the purchase of that car, right? Whereas the lunch, that'll extend for a short period of time, and then that one will be done, and there'll be another thing to be able to complain about. But, like, a big purchase like that, the empath knows that they're going to hear about that for the life of that vehicle.
Yeah.
So, well, this can happen too, kind of like we've talked about in our mood-based love episode, because the narcissistic experience is so emotion and mood-based, even if you pick a car that they initially like, and you know that they like this vehicle, you know, they'll be happy with it. But as soon as things start going wrong with it, or it no longer is new and shiny to them, yeah, now you're going to hear complaints about it, and now you're going to be gaslit at that point. Oh, why did you insist on us getting this vehicle? You know, and it's like, well, I don't think I insisted on us getting this vehicle. It's something that we both preferred. But they will change the narrative at that point.
Yeah.
So, again, they don't care about reality or violating reality. So they can go about doing that. And that's kind of like you're talking about. They set you up to be the victim because it's the lie from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't care what car we buy. As long as it gets me from point A to point B, I don't care. Right? If it's that type of individual putting it out there. Or the other part of this is they'll make a decision impossible by saying, no, I really care about the type of vehicle I drive. And we need this type of vehicle. But most likely when it comes to the narcissist and the extravagance of the narcissist, it's actually outside of your budget.
Right.
And so you have to stay within the reasonable bounds. If you're the voice of reason within a relationship, then you stay within the reasonable bounds and get a vehicle, a functional, nice vehicle, but then you get beat up because it's not the vehicle that they wanted. And so they will always hold this idealized reality over your head.
It is so brutal, though, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is why we have this whole podcast, because working with a narcissist, being in any kind of relationship with a narcissist, particularly, you know, if they're in this neo-narcissism sort of category that we talked about, is so destructive and damaging and crazy making. Mm-hmm. So you have to be able to like consider these kinds of things and pulling those threads apart and know that you're not crazy. This is by design of a narcissist, how this is going to play out.
Yeah. Well, here's another spin on it. Okay. So we've talked about, you know, they say they don't care about which choice you make, or they clearly want the most expensive thing you can afford. What if they just act really disappointed in the choices you make all the time? Mm-hmm. Even if they're not involved in the decision-making process, you know, so say you're just even telling them about something you decided to do for yourself, but then they act disappointed, like the decisions you've made for yourself have impacted their world in some way.
Or they just think, right through that disappointment lens, they just think the decisions you made are stupid.
Yeah.
Like, why would you go out and do this, or buy this, or spend your time doing this type thing?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Or, like, yeah, and it's, so even if you're the child of one, and you're living your own life, and making decisions, and you share a choice you've made, something you're excited about doing, and the reaction you get is disappointment or negative reaction, and it's like, or you know, well, why didn't you share that information with me? Or I, you know, you sold that. Why would you do that? Did you tell other people that you were going to do that? Like, the decision has nothing to do with them, really, because you're living your own life, but somehow they managed to make your choices personal to them.
So, yeah, and that's a really good example. And I see that all the time within my practice, right? Where adult children whose parents were narcissists or a narcissist within that parental framework, yeah, that parental narcissist will always demean the choices that that child makes, even if they're like great choices. And of course, if that cycle is in place where the child is constantly trying to make the parent happy or impress the parent or say, hey, look, I've made a good decision now, haven't I? Again, when is enough enough? And there's constantly a moving bar. And so to find approval through a narcissist, you know, there's that movie years and years ago, The Neverending Story. It's like the never-ending story. It's the never-ending attempt to make the narcissist happy. And it's no different than the song that never ends. It just goes round and round, on and on.
I also think that can happen because if there's, particularly parent to child, if there's years of training involved there, you don't have to put in, as a narcissist, a lot of extra effort to get the same result. All you have to do is sort of give that familiar look, that little bit of tone in your voice, the like disappointed, sort of flattened out tone, right? They weren't consulted in whatever the decision was and talked about and sought out. So they just have to put all of that out in those quote unquote subtle ways. They're not very subtle, but they don't have to be as aggressive about it. And they get the same result. Same feed. Potentially, or at least an attempt to the same feed.
So, and the interesting thing about that is you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, because you're damned if you tell the parent about your choices, and you're also damned if you don't share the information with them and they find out you didn't share it with them.
That's right.
So then it just keeps going on and on and on.
I think this is a really great signature too, right? If you find that you're doing that, like you have really great news to share and you don't want to tell the narcissist in your life, that's saying something, right? Because why wouldn't you want to run to your people, right? And particularly if it's a parent and there's an implication that they're a safe person, right? There's sort of this social idea that they're a safe person and you can't go to them to tell them that. That's a moment to potentially give yourself some pause, to be like, why? If you're unaware that you're in, that this is the relationship dynamic. Or that you're hiding, you sort of like, oh, I'm just going to keep that piece to myself or that piece to myself.
Yeah,
that's a really interesting point, because what is it about that natural hesitancy and or how important it might be to recognize that natural hesitancy if you haven't fully identified that person in your life or really figured out what you're dealing with yet, to really come to an understanding of what that dynamic is actually all about. So now, we all, I call it information management. It's a little bit different than, you know, the profession of information management. But, you know, when it comes to relationships, managing information, now we all do it to some degree, right? Like, you know, if there's a relative that you don't see very often, you might not talk about deeper things with them or personal things with them or a stranger like you would with your best friend. So we just naturally reserve information to some degree, but what you're talking about in family relationship or parental relationship between parents and kids, there's this assumed safety. And so that assumed safety says that I should be able to share this information with this person, and I shouldn't be beat up for doing so. So, yeah, when you start getting beat up, or you have been continuously beat up for something, then, of course, that's where we need to look at what boundaries need to be set. All right. Well, as usual, you don't know how to deal with something until you know what you're dealing with. We'll see you next time.